Lawmakers got their first look at a whistleblower complaint ahead of testimony from Acting Director of National Security Joseph McGuire today.
To the degree that people did comment, and there was not a lot of it, Democrats came out and said they were extremely concerned.
And for the fourth straight year, millennials are leaving big U.S. cities.
This was happening in New York, Chicago, Houston, San Francisco, Las Vegas, Washington, and Portland.
Plus, a look at the NFL team run by women. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at why tens of thousands of millennials are leaving big U.S. cities, here's what you missed. Yesterday, the White House released a rough transcript of President Trump's July phone call with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. It did show that the president asked Mr. Zelensky to investigate Joe Biden and his son. During the call, according to the transcript, President Trump also reminded Mr. Zelensky that the U.S. sends military aid to Ukraine. However, he didn't make an explicit link between the aid and his request for an investigation into the Bidens. Now, attention in Washington turns to the whistleblower complaint that's thought to contain concerns about the call. Members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees were given copies of the report yesterday. Their reaction? Well, here's Siobhan Hughes in Washington.
It was viewed in secure, compartmented locations on both the House and the Senate side. Now, only people on the Intelligence Committees had access. Among those, though, were House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. To the degree that people did comment, and there was not a lot of it, Democrats came out and said they were extremely concerned.
One of those concerned? Democrat Adam Schiff, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee.
I found the allegations deeply disturbing. I also found them very credible. I can understand why the Inspector General found them credible.
Some Republicans have defended Mr. Trump's activities as routine communications with a foreign leader. President Trump called it a, quote, nothing call. Today, Joseph McGuire, the acting director of U.S. National Intelligence, is set to testify in front of the House Intelligence Panel. Here's Siobhan again.
This is going to be front and center because he is the person who has blocked that whistleblower complaint previously from being sent to the Congress, and he's got a lot to answer for.
We'll have the latest on what he says in our afternoon edition. Meanwhile, across the pond, British lawmakers confronted Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who hastily returned to London after the UK's Supreme Court found that his decision to suspend Parliament for 5 weeks was illegal. It was a pretty raucous session. Here's what he had to say.
This Parliament must either stand aside and let this government get Brexit done, or bring a vote of confidence and finally face the day of reckoning with the voters.
Mr. Johnson also said that he thought the court had been wrong to pronounce on a political question at a time of great national controversy. So what does all of this mean for Brexit? Here's Jason Douglas from London.
Okay, well, things haven't really changed that much. We're still heading for an extension to Brexit, and we're still heading for an election. What happens next is Mr. Johnson is going to attempt to renegotiate the withdrawal deal with the European Union. Even if he manages to come back with a new deal, it's unlikely that Parliament will vote for it. And Mr. Johnson, unfortunately for him, is a little bit boxed in after that because Parliament has already passed a law that says if you can't get a deal, then you've got to ask for an extension. Now, Mr. Johnson has said that he would rather die in a ditch than do that. So we're still in this stalemate.
That was Jason Douglas in London. Now, our main story this morning. Have you found yourself priced out of a city like New York or Houston? Latest data from the 2018 census shows you might not be alone. For the fourth straight year, people between the ages of 35 and 39 have left cities with 500,000 people or more. Charlie Turner has been finding out why from Janet Adamy.
Janet, in recent months, the Wall Street Journal has reported on various migration trends, such as young people moving out of New York City and millennials moving to the suburbs. The journal has analyzed data on young people leaving the cities, this from the census. What do the numbers show?
For the fourth year in a row, tens of thousands of young adults, this is millennials and the youngest members of Generation X, have moved out of the nation's biggest cities. This was happening in New York, Chicago, Houston, San Francisco, Las Vegas, Washington, and Portland. There was, of course, a pretty big influx of young people into cities after the recession. And what this latest data shows is that, you know, for a couple of years, we've had these sustained declines. There were questions about whether maybe it was just an anomaly of a couple of years, or if this millennial generation was finally starting to move into that next stage of life where they were getting married and buying houses. And the big question was, are they going to stay and be different than previous generations, or are they going to uproot and move to suburbs for more affordable housing, more space, better schools? And what we're seeing in this pattern suggests that as they do get older, yes, they are starting to act more like previous generations and less like the kind of anomaly of urban dwellers that they have been for the much of this past decade.
And we're talking about numbers in the tens of thousands. Cities with more than 500,000 people put together lost almost 27,000 residents among the ages of 25 to 39. This was last year. And although this was, I guess, half of the drop in 2017, that's still a sizable decline.
I think the bigger story here is the pattern. So a large batch of cities losing tens of thousands of people in the whole scheme of things is not that significant. But what we had in the middle of the decade was, you know, a pretty steady influx for a couple of years. And I think developers, other real estate professionals, schools, employers to a certain extent have kind of been paying close attention to whether this remained a net inflow or an outflow. And the fact that it's 4 years of outflow starts to tell us that there's some different behavior going on, even if the numbers aren't huge.
The drop last year was driven by a decline in urban residents, I guess older millennials, 35 to 39.
That's right. Among the youngest millennials and that very oldest cohort of the Gen Z that follows them, they are still moving into cities. Their numbers in the largest cities are marginally positive, but where the losses are really happening is urban residents aged 35 to 39. Again, that's the age at which, you know, the people are oftentimes making a decision about where they're going to settle down. They are either, you know, well into or staring down decisions about schools. And what we're finding is that that age group is a point at which people decide that they don't want to stay anymore.
And you mentioned schools. Aren't those basically the primary reasons? They don't like the schools in the big cities, and also the costs of housing for the space that they're getting?
That's right. Housing costs in general appear to be the biggest factor, and that's in cities that are relatively affluent, as well as ones that are struggling more. Interestingly, there was some research out of Boston University that found in a study of mayors that only 13% said that the housing stock in their city fit the populations very well. So that there's a real mismatch between the kind of housing people want and the kind of housing that's available in cities, and that it does appear to be the main driver, along with other public goods like public schools.
You can find Janet's story up on WSJ.com. On to markets. Yesterday, we talked about why investors were concerned over impeachment proceedings. Hint, it had to do with uncertainty. But history can offer some guidance. During the Clinton impeachment, investors stuck with technology stocks. Will they do the same this time? Ivantika Chilkati has more.
So you might think investors would turn defensive if this impeachment trial goes ahead. They've already been quite skittish about global growth and the US-China trade wars. But if you look at history, actually, and you look at the Clinton trial, investors did not turn defensive. They actually turned to growth stocks. They turned to the tech stocks that were doing really well in the midst of that dot-com boom. Of the best performing stocks during the trial, there were a bunch of tech names we still recognize, like Amazon and eBay. It really wasn't a case of people turning to safe sectors, like utilities, say. But it is worth pointing out investors haven't actually all started positioning yet. Not everyone thinks this impeachment will make it through a Republican-controlled Senate, but history does provide some indications of the strategies that might occur if it does.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. The Federal Trade Commission sued the dating company Match. The FTC alleges that Match used fake love interest advertisements to trick hundreds of thousands of users into buying subscriptions on Match.com. How did it work? Well, according to the FTC, between June 2016 and May 2018, Match sent emails to non-subscribers that said someone had expressed interest in them. But consumers were unaware that the emails received could be from scammers. Some of them went on to buy subscriptions. Match said in a statement, quote, "The FTC has misrepresented internal emails and relied on cherry-picked data to make outrageous claims, and we intend to vigorously defend ourselves against these claims in court." Finally, if you're a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles, you might already know this, but more than half of the team's top advisors are women. It's a real outlier. Even though women make up about half of NFL fans, only 18% of the VP level and higher jobs in the league are held by women. So how did this come about? Well, the team's owner, Jeffrey Lurie, said he didn't set out to hire women to make a point. He just wanted diversity of opinions, so he looked for candidates who might not typically be in football circles. That, he said, seemed to result in a lot of women winning hiring decisions. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.